In the name of one God, creator, redeemer, and sustainer of our lives. Amen. When I was in, I grew up a Lutheran. And so I went to Lutheran grade schools. And so we had religion class every day, and we learned all kinds of things in religion class, like what Baptists believed and where they were wrong, and what Presbyterians believed and where they were wrong, and what Catholics believed and where they were wrong, and why Lutherans were right. There was also other good stuff, but that was kind of the gist of things in many ways. And one of the things, I mean, we learned about, you know, we learned the Ten Commandments. I had to memorize the Ten Commandments. Love the Lord your God with all your heart. I mean, now can I even remember them, you know. Thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not kill, you know, thou shalt not covet. And, you know, one of those commandments I think is really helpful. Thou shalt not bear false witness. When I was a kid, I didn't even have any sense of what that meant. But what it means is you should tell the truth about your neighbor. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor, which means you should tell the truth about the neighbor, which means you should not be involved in character assassination about your neighbor. When I think about the current political climate in the United States, I'm convinced that we need to recapture the Ninth Commandment. That basically in this era of division and where everybody's, that we're not telling the truth about our opponent or the people we disagree with or the enemy. If we're doing character assassination and not telling the truth about who they are and what they believe and what they really stand for, we're not helping the matter, right? And so I'm kind of on a minor crusade to encourage all evangelicals and Christians back in the United States to reclaim the Ninth Commandment. But that's a side point to what I really want to say. Because we learned the Ten Commandments, and those were good, but all that other stuff, all those other rules in Leviticus and Exodus and Numbers and Deuteronomy, that was the stuff that the Jews believed, and they were like this big burden somehow that Jesus came to free us from, right? So the fact that Jesus comes means we don't have to do all those things that we used to have to do way back in the day, and that somehow Jewish religion was very oppressive because they had to follow all these rules, and thank God that it is Christ who has set us free and has given us freedom. And that's more or less how I grew up, believing. Like there are all these rules, and you know, I'm thankful that I didn't have to read Leviticus because it's not an exciting book, right? It didn't seem to be to me until I went to seminary, and then when I took my Old Testament class, it wasn't an Old Testament class; it was a Hebrew Scriptures class because that's what the Old Testament is. It's the Scriptures of the Hebrew people, of the Jewish people, and our professor wanted to encourage us to actually engage the Hebrew Scriptures on their own terms, and not as through the Christian lens and a Christian viewpoint looking at these things, but actually see them as the sacred people of, you know, of Moses, the sacred scriptures of people like Moses and David and this was part of the religious practice of the Jewish people. And we read the Jewish translation of the scriptures. It's called the Tanakh. It's from the Jewish Publication Society, and it's basically, in many ways, the same book that we have in the Old Testament, except it's the Jews claiming it as their own text of faith. And it was a great class. And one of the most astonishing things in the class is to realize and to hear that from a Jewish perspective, all those rules in the Old Testament, they weren't a burden. That the law wasn't a burden. That actually, the law was life-giving. That in a context where there was chaos, in a context where there was, might makes right, in a context where there was murder and, you know, the abuse of power and all those kinds of things, for God to say, thou shalt not kill, was a revelation. For God to say, thou shalt not steal, all of a sudden you're like, don't commit adultery. Honor the bond of marriage with your neighbor. Don't covet your neighbor's stuff. Like, all of those things all of a sudden created space for better relationships among people. Like, when you're not killing each other, you actually have room to begin having a relationship with each other, right? When you're not stealing your neighbor's stuff, they, you know, they're not as angry with you, and you can actually hang out and be together, right? So from the Jewish perspective, all of those things, and even the little quirky ones in the Old Testament of, you know, burn down your house if it has mildew in it. You know, actually, if you live in a culture and a time and a place where you can't, like if your house gets mildew, you know that's not to your benefit. It's not healthy for you, right? So destroy it and build a new one. That's to your benefit. Like we understand that now. Like if we get mold in our houses, we understand that now. That's actually one of those rules in Leviticus. This rule about not eating shellfish. You know, if you're a hill people and you live, you know, several days journey from the ocean and you have no refrigeration, it's probably not to your benefit to be eating shellfish, right? And so when it says don't eat shellfish, that's kind of that actually these rules, I mean, from a Jewish, these were things that actually gave us life, that protected our health, that created community for each other. So it's like, wow, this was a revelation for me. So that's why today in the text from Romans, Paul says, don't owe anyone anything but to love your neighbor. Because loving your neighbor as yourself is the fulfillment of the law. That's what it means to not, you shall not kill, you shall not steal, you shall not commit adultery. It ultimately we do it because we love our neighbor. Jesus said the same thing. Jesus said, you know, the summary of the greatest of all the commandments is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself. So that the tie between what Christianity is up to and ultimately what Judaism is it's about love. Right? I said last week, because, you know, in my sermon, that it is increasingly becoming apparent to me that this thing that we're involved in, this thing that we do, is basically just a journey in learning how to love better. Because we don't do it very well. Because it's such a challenge that in some ways it's a lifelong process. It gets worked out in our marriages, it gets worked out in our relationships with our children, it gets worked out with our relationships with our friends, that basically all of those things are ways in which we're learning how to love each other better. And that for Paul affirms, like, no, that's what this stuff is. Love one another. So today in the gospel text, and I was struck then that when I was reading about today's gospel text, and one of the phrases in there is like, when two or three are gathered together, there I am in the midst of them. Jesus is saying, there I am with you. That the rabbis used to say, when there are two or three together, who are engaged in the law with each other, who are studying the law, who are being preoccupied with the law, the Shekinah glory of God is there among them. That's what the rabbis would teach. Because if you were engaged with the law with each other, you were engaged in learning how to love. You're engaged in this exercise of loving, and the glory of God would be part of that process. So, Jesus in today's gospel is trying to teach his disciples about how to love better, how to be a community of love. He says, well, you know, if a brother or sister sins, go and talk to them, right? Confront them. And if that doesn't work, bring two or three other people with you. And if that doesn't work, then bring it before the whole community and do a whole community intervention. And, you know, if that doesn't work, well, then treat them like they're a Gentile or a tax collector is basically what the text says. And, you know, for many years, this is one of those verses that the church has done a great job of misinterpreting. In pretty profound ways. Because when they say, well, if your brother sins against you, I think what the church is, when the church gets caught up in doing sin management, that's what happens is they start, so they think if a brother is sinning or a sister is sinning, like if they're cheating on their taxes, if they're going to the bar on Saturday night, you know, if they're, you know, smoking, you know, that's what comes to a lot of people's minds, right? And so you gotta, what's happened in a lot of Christian communities is, oh, they're caught up in a sin, we gotta approach them and confront them, right? So that they conform to our values and conform to our standards. Otherwise, we're going to have to kick them out. which is often how this text gets used. And there are communities, there are a faith where that's what happens. It becomes a way of enforcing a kind of discipline within the community, a kind of care, a kind of moral behavior within the community. That's how this verse gets interpreted. The problem is, though, is that if Jesus says that the fulfillment of the law is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself, then the flip side of that, the sin, what sin is basically, it's a failure to love. It's the failure to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. It's the failure to love your neighbor. And you end up failing to love your neighbor by doing things like killing them, by stealing their property, you know, by breaking their bond of marriage, by indulging in character assassination. That's the failure to love. So when Jesus says, if you see a brother or sister who are caught up in sin, it's not about whether or not they're cheating on their taxes so much, although I think that falls under the rubric. But that's just a very thin, narrow version of it. The real sin is, like, if you see a brother or sister who are caught up in a pattern where they're destroying their relationships, they're hurting themselves, they're hurting other people, right? They're hurting you. Well, do an intervention. Confront them. Like, that they're not living into the fullest possibility of who they can be, of who the people of God, who God has called them to be. So, you know, approach them and say, hey, you know, what's going on? How can we repair what's happening here? And if that doesn't work, take two or three other people. Like, it matters so much that they be part of the community, and the benefit and the cohesion of the community, that we need to start kind of intervening here, so that the sin of failing to love, of committing violence against each other, of committing violence against the self, we can do an intervention. And if that doesn't work, then bring it before the whole assembly, which back then would have been a much smaller size than our congregation, right? I mean, you're talking about small house churches of 15 to 30 people. And then Jesus says, and if even that fails, well, then treat them like a Gentile or tax collector. Part of my thinking on this shifted when I realized, you know what? Every one of us here is either a Gentile or a tax collector. If you think about it, you're either a Gentile or a tax collector, right? Unless you are of Jewish descent. So what does that mean, right? So for this community in Matthew, it says, well, treat them, it's coming from within a Jewish perspective. And within Judaism, if people weren't a part of your community, if they didn't follow the law, they weren't part of your community. And you didn't have to treat them as your neighbor. They weren't considered your neighbor. That's why there's all these things in the Old Testament. These lawyers and scribes and Pharisees asking, well, who is my neighbor? Like, is it really those people who don't belong to me? And Jesus consistently says, yeah, your neighbor isn't just your community, it's the person outside. And so Jesus starts reaching out to Gentiles. Jesus starts reaching out to tax collectors. So when he says, hey, if there's somebody in your community and you need to start treating them as a Gentile or a tax collector, it's like you need to work extra special hard in terms of engaging them. I mean, they're no longer part of the community. They're no longer part of your process, but still, the whole Christian impulse is to bring in the Gentiles and to bring in the tax collectors. Because Jesus says, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. And whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Which the church has interpreted as being, I mean, historically, I mean, some people are saying, well, you get to determine what's moral and what's immoral. And whatever you determine is moral is that's what the church dictates. And then God will consider it immoral too, if that's what the church dictates. That's kind of like a gross summary of the Catholic position. I was struck this week, though, that no, what if Jesus is saying is that, no, it's not about whatever's happening in heaven. It's that when in your relationship with other people, in your relationship in your community, that your actions have spiritual consequences. That what you're doing is impacting other people spiritually. It's impacting those around you spiritually. It's impacting yourself spiritually. That when you bind something, when you constrain something, when you impact somebody in a negative way and tie them up spiritually, like in your actions, I mean, that's when you do it on earth, it's done to them in heaven. It's done to them spiritually. But when you unbind them, when you release them, they're unbound in heaven. They're unbound spiritually. Like I hear Jesus saying that, no, our actions, we impact each other deeply, which is why love matters. That when you love well, you create a space of freedom. The genuine love creates a space of freedom for the other to fully be themselves. That's what love is. And what Jesus says is that when two or three are gathered together in my name, I am there in the midst of them. If you're gathered together and you're loving well, the Shekinah glory of God is there. Amen.